Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Quantum Spirituality on DreamVision7RadioNetwork.com, the show where past spiritual wisdom and present-day science merge to show us our future. Your host is Peter Canova, author of the 25-time award-winning book series, The First Souls Trilogy, available on Amazon, and Peter's website, PeterCanova.com. That's PeterCanova.com. This show is a live video, so if you're only listening and want to watch, go to Peter's website, PeterCanova.com, PeterCanova.com, where you can access his Facebook page to leave comments or questions, and click the D7RN link where you can receive a free gift video.
Good evening, friends, followers, and listeners. I'm Peter Canova, 25-time award-winning author of Pope Annalisa and the First Souls Trilogy, and I'm your host on Quantum Spirituality on Dream Visions 7 radio and TV network. Quantum Spirituality is the place where the past and the present merge to tell us about our future. Now, I always encourage everybody to go and look at the archives and view the first three episodes, because it's there we give a very comprehensive audio-visual presentation on the topic that this show is really about, which is consciousness, from where it comes, what it is, and how it operates in our lives. And if you go to my website, petercanova.com, PeterCanova.com, that's where you can access the archived episodes. And you'll also be able to see a number of articles, blogs, and videos on a variety of interesting topics related to this show. I think we have a really good show lined up for you tonight. And really, without any further delay, let's get right to it and enjoy. So what we're going to do today is dissect consciousness from a scientific point of view. So you really don't have to have a scientific understanding of consciousness in order to contact consciousness, in order to experience its benefits. But I think it really helps for a couple of different reasons. First of all, the Western mind has become so logical and analytical and left brain these days that I think having an understanding of an immaterial experience like consciousness from a scientific point of view really helps people's faith in believing that there is such a thing to begin with. And also it sets up another parameter, a guide, in order to help us along our journey into conscious experience. So the first thing we need to understand is that consciousness arises outside of the body and is independent of the brain. Now, people whose brains were virtually dead or inactive from an illness have still had very vivid otherworldly experiences that they recounted when they recovered. A recent example would be Dr. Aben Alexander, who wrote a book on his own encounters in an alternate world, I guess we should say, while he was literally brain dead from meningitis. And this is similar to people in deep meditation or sleep, where the waking brain is inactive and they experience alternate realities as in dreams, and they gain valuable and often life-saving information otherwise not cognizant to the waking mind. Now, a good example of that would be a recent guest I had on, Kat Canavis, whose dreams of cancer literally saved her life. And she went on to write a book with a doctor who chronicled a number of different people who had similar experiences of consciousness coming in through dreams and giving them information that saved their lives. So this indicates that the brain is really not the seat of consciousness. Just the opposite. It's kind of like a choke point or flow meter, stepping the conscious energy down that arises outside of the physical body. And when the conscious brain is less active, awareness and contact with this higher source of consciousness becomes more active. So the brain is really kind of like a transformer or transducer that steps down or limits higher energy to create limited physical consciousness out of the non-material, spiritual, or energetic consciousness that arises outside of the physical world. So this indicates that we have a single continuous source of conscious intelligent energy that creates and sustains everything that exists. This means that consciousness comes before matter, and consciousness gives rise to matter. This directly contradicts the view that matter somehow causes consciousness, and consciousness is dependent on the activity of the brain. This is the view that seems supported by casual observation of everyday experience of the macroscopic world. But this observation doesn't hold up at the subatomic level that creates the macroscopic world, where particles vast distances apart communicate instantaneously faster than the speed of light. Material particles don't even exist at the most fundamental levels of reality. All that exists are waves of light energy. These waves of light energy seem to collapse into particles under the presence of a conscious observer. The belief that matter is fundamental rather than the result of a deeper reality is also contradicted by experiences and experiments at the macroscopic level, where humans have been shown to have the ability to communicate telepathically, and they can react to non-local or distant objects or experiences. Human DNA has also been shown in laboratories to communicate with and influence and even organize particles of light or photons. And the universe appears to be a holographic projection of a larger source of the information that constitutes the physical world. And this conclusion came from the observed characteristics of black holes. Now, all these things indicate that consciousness is the infinite ocean that permeates all levels of reality. And we are like sparks of that consciousness, as so many fish swimming in the waters of the infinite. Everything I've spoken about comes from science, and it's in complete harmony with ancient sacred spiritual wisdom. But let's stick to science. The information we've spoken of has fractured the walls of scientific materialism, the belief that matter is fundamental and is really all that is. The Pandora's box of consciousness is open. The cat is out of the bag. The taboo that silenced alternative viewpoints of consciousness and the creation is broken in scientific circles. The move towards a consciousness-based alternative view of reality has been a series of gradual stepping stones. Niels Bohr formulated the Copenhagen interpretation that human consciousness affects the behavior of wave energy, collapsing it into particles. David Bohm introduced the holographic universe theory and said that an implicate or underlying order exists that underpins visible matter and reality. John Wheeler introduced the participatory anthropic principle that stated the universe needs conscious observers to exist. These stepping stones led to one of the most prominent theories gaining traction in the scientific world today, called panpsychism. Panpsychism envisions that consciousness is fundamental and matter, space, and time derive from consciousness, not the other way around. The fundamental belief of the consciousness first school of thought is that consciousness is like a field of active, intelligent information that permeates space. This field has been described by different names such as pilot waves, qualia space, zero point energy, the quantum vacuum, and phase space. But the common denominator is an energy field that transcends but permeates and creates third-dimensional space-time, an intelligent energy field carrying directive information. So, how do we go from the invisible to the visible? Well, that's really the next conceptual phrase that science is trying to dissect about consciousness as they attempt to answer some granular questions like, what is the physical link or bridge between this all-encompassing directive force field of consciousness and the human brain, the physical human brain, that ends up manifesting as personal consciousness or experience? How do we distinguish the consciousness of a rock from human consciousness? Scientists are theorizing a number of possible vehicles or carriers of transcendental consciousness into physical form. Dark matter, Bose-Einstein condensates, axions, or other equally exotic-sounding phenomena have been put forth as candidates. The jury is out on this subject, but the hunt is on. The question of the degrees of consciousness theorized by panpsychism is being addressed by other concepts with other fancy names, such as integrative information theory. To make it simple and understand this, the following line of reasoning, all of which has been scientifically or experimentally demonstrated, is something that I want you to follow here. So Energy is a force field that permeates the visible universe. Matter is derived from energy and it's interchangeable with energy. Now, that's what Einstein's famous E equals mc squared formula has told us, that matter actually comes from energy. Energy expresses itself in different frequencies or vibrations, resulting in different forms of matter that we all see around us. Energy carries information that codes matter into these distinct forms, just the way that DNA codes the human body into distinctive forms. So subatomic particles have actually demonstrated the ability, such as human DNA cells, to communicate with, direct, and organize particles of light. And this was proved in an experiment by a Russian named Vladimir Polpinin. So energy is therefore conscious and intelligent because it has the power to create, communicate with, and direct or organize matter. Since energy is present in some form in all matter, that must mean all matter is conscious to some degree. So energy is like a 24/7 radio broadcast. The degree to which that broadcast is received and understood is the difference or processing ability of the object in question. So biological species have greater degrees of processing power than inorganic objects. A rock, for instance, processes less information than an amoeba, which processes less than a plant, which processes less than a fish, which processes less than a dog, which processes less than a human. The more complex biological systems of higher species have what is called recurrent processing. Biological brains have thousands of neuroelectrical pathways where information is processed over and over in feedback loops, like watching a movie multiple times to understand its themes or messages. In simple terms, this means the ability to think, and thinking gives rise to higher consciousness functions like abstract thought and self-awareness. Science is currently focusing on the question we spoke about a moment ago about how consciousness makes the leap from an invisible force that permeates space into individual physical objects like ourselves. And as part of an ongoing debate, computer scientist Bernardo Kastrup recently put forward an argument against panpsychism. Kastrup can't believe all things are conscious, only perhaps biological beings. And to prove his doubts, he says that panpsychism fails to show how a master or a universal consciousness can manifest within individual objects. Kastrup uses the example of electrons. In order to prove electrons have consciousness, he says that panpsychism must view electrons as distinct bodies with defined spatial boundaries. His assumption is that consciousness must manifest within spatially contained physical objects, like the electrons floating behind me or in a human skull. Kastrup's argument relies on quantum field theory, or QFT, which is the most successful theory ever devised in terms of its predictive power. And under QFT, elementary particles are not viewed really as objects, but just as local patterns of excitation or vibration in a spatially boundless infinite quantum field, the same field that we discussed earlier. So each particle is really analogous to a ripple on the surface of a lake rather than being a self-contained object. And he's correct. Although it seems that he is well on his way to proving the theory he opposes for reasons he may not have thought through. Kastrup says that for panpsychism to be valid, it must assume the quantum field is conscious. Now, remember, the quantum field is just another name for the universal consciousness that permeates everything. As we told you, it goes by a number of different names in the scientific field. If the quantum field is conscious, but the electron is just a vibration in the quantum field, Kastrup reasons that the electron can't have individual consciousness apart from that field. So he claims panpsychism can theorize a universal consciousness, but it falls apart because it can't account for individual consciousness or experience and how the universal field makes that leap into individual experience. Now, in effect, he is saying that the part cannot be separated from the whole, but in doing so, he unwittingly supports panpsychism. Here's why. Panpsychics, mystics, and alternative physicists agree with Castrum that we and our universe are not really solid objects, but like electrons that make up our bodies in the quantum field, we are electromagnetic manifestations. It'll surprise you to know that what gives all 3D objects the appearance of solidity is not the mass of the particles. Remember, as Kastrup said, particles like electrons are just localized vibrations of energy. Quantum mechanics shows that we hold and see and feel objects because of electrical charge, not because of the properties of mass or matter. The idea of differing frequencies and intermediate energies flowing from a unified whole is not only consistent with quantum physics, but also with ancient spiritual mysticism. God, or the one force in mystical traditions, alter or limited its vibrational energy to create individual points of consciousness, or ripples on the lake, as Kastrup would have it. These intermediary points of consciousness were identified as spiritual beings, angels, or archetypes, and their energies in turn contributed to shaping the cosmos, just as science sees a variety of natural forces all stemming from one unified energy. So it is that everything can be part of one consciousness, yet have the appearance and characteristics of separate conscious experience in the marvelous holographic light show that we call existence. Before we cut to a brief commercial break, a number of people have written asking for more information on my series, The First Souls Trilogy. If you go to my website, petercanova.com, you can click on individual descriptions of each book and also access two other websites for Pope Annalisa and the 13th Disciple. Each website is highly informative of spiritual history and the quantum ideas relating to this show. The First Souls Trilogy has won 25 prestigious literary awards, such as Writer's Digest, Nautilus, and Eric Hoffer. It's a fictionalized epic of three fast-paced thrillers that deal with the same principles you've been hearing on this show, Quantum Spirituality. The series chronicles the first spirit consciousness to incarnate in the material world. It traces the incarnations of these characters over different epochs of history, where they appear whenever humanity faces a crossroads of evolution or destruction. The first book, Pope Annalisa, is about an African nun who becomes pope in the near future during an impending nuclear war between America and Iran. The 13th Disciple is about Mary Magdalene and the destruction of the early feminine-led mystical Christian church. The final book, The Light of Distant Suns, is the book of origins, taking place in Atlantis during the earliest times of spirit incarnations in the earth. It's the story of an advanced technical empire that descends into a ruinous civil war for dominion of the world. You can also find 5-star reviews of each book on Amazon and my website, petercanova.com. I'm Peter Canova, and this is Quantum Spirituality on the Dream Vision 7 Syndicated Network. Please join us as we resume right after this short commercial break.
The First Souls Trilogy, one of the most highly awarded fictional independent book series on the market, is a grand vision of human evolution. It chronicles the first spirit consciousness to enter the material world in three page-turning novels that introduce a new paradigm of reality based on genuine ancient wisdom and quantum science. These inspirational thrillers will force you to rethink the nature of the world in which we live. Visit the PeterCanova.com website for information and ordering. In a world facing annihilation, a miraculous African nun rises to become the first female pope through a web of war, murder, and betrayal. Loved by some, hated by many, she becomes the deadly target of Islamic terrorists and her own cardinals as she introduces a new vision that will either save humanity or accelerate its destruction. Four people must race against a nuclear holocaust to learn her astonishing secret. Pope Annalisa is available at petercanova.com, Amazon, and other online booksellers and bookstores worldwide.
Why are we here? How can we be happy? Questions asked from millennials to boomers. Crappy to Happy, Sacred Stories of Transformational Joy answers them using true stories of grit, grace, and love. James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy, wrote in the foreword, "This book is a seminar about emerging truths and offers grounded solutions through the art of the comeback." Dr. Bernie Siegel, a contributing author, wrote, "Bodies die, but spirits and consciousness survive and recycle." So, grab some tissues, open your book, and prepare to cry and laugh till it heals. Crappy to Happy by Reverend Ariel Patricia and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers worldwide.
How did life start on Earth, and why is there so much suffering? Are we living in a simulated reality like the characters in the Matrix movie? Do parallel dimensions exist alongside ours, influencing our experience? What are the mysterious dark energies that penetrate our universe? Peter Canova folds space and time to bring the twin bookends of ancient wisdom and quantum science into a single focal point, answering these and many other deep mysteries of the creation. Quantum Spirituality can be heard every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern and 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. See the show where past and present merge to show us our future.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Hi, I'm Peter Canova, and welcome back to Quantum Spirituality, where we have some breaking news. Biogeneticist John McFadden of the University of Surrey in the UK has put forth a new theory backed by scientific observation. It's called CEMI, or Conscious Electromagnetic Information. McFadden claims that consciousness resides in an electromagnetic field connected to the brain and not in the brain itself. Why is this a potential breakthrough? Consciousness residing in an electromagnetic field fits with the counterintuitive recognition of quantum physics that the appearance of physical objects is an electrochemical manifestation, not a product of mass or matter. So it unifies the idea of consciousness with the observations of quantum physics. Now, McFadden doesn't flat out state that the electromagnetic field is a master cosmic consciousness. He confines his discussions to personal electromagnetic fields, though he does leave open the possibility that consciousness survives the physical body, which implies a universal aspect to the electromagnetic field. This borders on the realization that consciousness is a universal energy field that connects with individual fields, which in turn are picked up by the brain like a receiver. This sheds light on the question of how an all-encompassing cosmic consciousness translates into objects of individual consciousness like human beings. What are the possibilities we can glean from all this information that we've heard? What kind of a picture can we piece together about reality and the world around us? Consciousness appears to be an energy field independent of the physical world, but penetrating it and shaping it. This energy field spawns subfields like a hurricane spins off tornadoes. The collective power of the mother field and the sub-energy fields manipulate electromagnetic frequencies or vibrations to form physical objects, including biological brains. Let's remind ourselves of some of the observed phenomena that tell us that everything that exists is really part of this conscious energy field. Random photons, or particles of light, were organized into patterns by the introduction of human DNA. In other words, they communicated. Electrons, the equivalent of thousands of light years apart, instantaneously respond to one another, faster than the speed of light. In the famous double slit experiment, electrons passing through two slits made the characteristics of wave patterns, as you see on the left. But when human observation entered the equation, as you see on the right, the electrons collapsed into particle behavior, showing that the human conscious observer affects the quantum field. An increasing number of experiments are indicating what some brave scientists have suspected for a while. There may be no such thing as objective reality, that we may be living in a holographic universe, which is an electromagnetic, energetic projection of higher being and higher mind. So let's try and summarize some of the points that we've learned so far in this discussion. So let's summarize everything that we've seen and heard today. The materialist view that consciousness, which is the totality of our thoughts, experiences, feelings, and reflections, is a byproduct of brain functions, just doesn't hold up. Objects without brains, like electrons, photons of light, and human DNA, communicate from vast distances apart, indicating they lie within the unified field of the master consciousness. Now, quantum field theory, or QFT, indicates that the objects we perceive are not physical in nature. They are electromagnetic vibrations in the quantum field that permeates reality. And consciousness is a single intelligent energy field that manifests in different frequencies so that all things possess consciousness to a degree. Biological objects generate an electromagnetic field that is a bridge between the master consciousness and the physical brain, which acts as a receiver and a transformer of step-down higher consciousness. So I imagine some people out there are thinking, well, you know, this is all very interesting, but doesn't really have a lot of meaning in my life. I mean, it's kind of abstract and remote from my life. So, you know, what good does having all this knowledge do? Well, you know, I think to a large extent, that's a personal takeaway. I think if you're a spiritual person, if you're on a spiritual path, one thing that this information does is it really reinforces many of the things that you may have understood about consciousness from your own personal reflections and meditations, and given it another dimension, given it a left brain or scientific dimension to your spiritual instincts. And I think that's extremely important, because validation is very important. I personally have never been the type of spiritual person that kind of floats out there and is just sort of, you know, content with my own inner visions, not criticizing people that do things that way. But I always like to see practical benefits, because I really think that spirituality needs to be practical. I mean, it needs to have an effect in this world, not just something that we do to make ourselves calm and peaceful. That's certainly part of it, valid part of it, and very good. But I also think there really has to be another dimension to it, and that, you know, there has to be measurable, practical results coming out of this. Otherwise, in some regards, you know, it can be viewed as spiritual, you know, mumbo jumbo. So, you know, we've seen many examples of people whose spirituality and whose spiritual understanding and whose guidance, inner guidance, has had practical effects in the real world of saving their life and saving other people's lives. I know that I've certainly had those experiences myself. And for those people who are starting on the path to spiritual consciousness, I think it's very important. And like I said at the very beginning of the program, that the Western world is so left brain now and so logical and analytical, and we've become so technocratic, that to have a validation from that standpoint of things that spiritual masters have been saying about consciousness and the presence of something larger than ourselves for so many years, it's extremely important. It's another bookend. It's another parameter that creates the arena in which we practice our spirituality. So I feel that the benefit of understanding all the sometimes complex theories and ideas and findings coming out of the quantum world is extremely important, not just for the world at large and for applied science, but for those people who are on a spiritual path. So a number of of people have written in and asked me about my background and how I first got into all these topics of consciousness and how I meditate and so forth. You know, I usually don't talk about that unless I'm in an interview because, you know, my experience, it might be of interest to some people, but everybody's path is different and everybody's meditation is different. But since I've talked about the whole subject of consciousness now and really told you that I want this to be a very practical thing for people to be able to bring this knowledge to bear in a way that they can incorporate it in their spiritual practice and make their spiritual practice more rich and deep and powerful and practical. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my background and how I got into this, how I became a writer and how I got interested in the whole subject of consciousness. Anyway, it kind of really started back in my 20s because prior to that, I had no inkling, trust me, of how I would get involved with any of this. My life was really taking a different track. I'd always had a business background in law school and in business school, and then later out in the working world. But when I was in my 20s, I guess I was always the type of person who was trying to, well, you know, I was asking the big questions of myself, like, what am I doing here? What's my purpose? And, you know, what's this all about? And it led me to answer an advertisement about a course that was being taught. This was some decades ago. I won't date myself here too much, but some decades ago. I went in and I took a class on what you would call psychic development or ESP, not a term used very much in these days, extrasensory perception. And you know, basically it was trying to, a class that was supposed to heighten our consciousness and heighten our awareness. And the first week of the class was very interesting, but I would say unremarkable. But on the very last day, we paired off in groups of two, and we were doing an experiment on intuitive medical readings. And one of the, you know, I would sit opposite another person. We would all sit opposite one person, and one person would have an index card in their hands of a person who had a problem, a physical or mental problem or whatever. There was a large bank of index cards because this course had been going for a while and everyone was required to bring in the names of two people that needed help or attention. So they had a random database of cards that we would pull from. And one person who was called the orientator or something like that would read from the card and just tell you the name, age, and address. They weren't really allowed to give you any more information than that. And I remember very clearly the first case that I did. It was an elderly gentleman in Miami, and they gave me his name, his age, and his address. And I had an outline of his physical form in mind. Of course, this was in my imagination. And I saw that his heart seemed to be tilted at a kind of a funny angle. This was the visualization I got. I suppose everybody's visualizations of these things is different. But to me, it came through as, you know, his heart being tilted and the aorta leading to the heart consequently were kind of pinched off. So I said, well, this gentleman appears to have a blockage in his aorta. And the person who had the index cards, they weren't allowed to prompt us or, you know, give us any information. If we got something corrected, they'd just say, what else can you tell me? And that was kind of a cue that you hit on something. And I remember seeing a strange object, a foreign object down at the bottom of his heart, bottom quadrant of his heart, didn't look like it belonged there. And the pacemaker came to mind. And I said, well, I think he's had a pacemaker installed. And they said, we have that information. Can you tell us what year the pacemaker was installed? So now I'm going to date myself. This was back in 1975. And the I had seen the in my mind a clock, and the hands were moving wildly in the clock, but then they stopped at 10 o'clock, which indicated to me 10 years earlier. So I said, well, it was installed in 1965. And again, that was correct. Well, getting all these hits was pretty surprising to me. And I went on from there, and it just kept getting more and more accurate, more and more proficient at it. And months later, I was a student at the time in Boston, and I had people lining up outside my doors for me to do medical readings for them because the word had kind of, you know, gotten around. So as I got older and I left to work overseas in the business world, I still maintained this interest. And it really opened up the doors. I mean, the fact that when I started swallowing my disbelief that this was really happening, and I shoved that disbelief to a back burner, it really opened up the floodgates. I mean, I started with remote viewing, telekinesis, when you feel telemetry, when you feel an object and you pick up psychic vibrations from an object, all these things were happening to me to the point almost where it got to the point where I almost felt like I was going crazy. I literally would know conversations happening 10 minutes in advance. I'd walk up to somebody and I'd like know their whole history. And it was not a good thing. It wasn't a good thing because it was almost like I was a sponge out of control. And I almost thought that I was going insane. And I went to the a British Spiritualist Association in London, which was an old, venerable association, because spirituality in England is a lot more advanced and understood, I think, than it is over here, which is why they write so many interesting books that we all love. And I did get some guidance over there. But this really led me to want to know, because I was a Capricorn, I had this practical side to me. It really led me to want to understand, how can all this stuff be happening? So I wanted to pursue this from a kind of a different angle, from not just from the spiritual angle that was flowing into me, but I wanted to kind of grasp it from a different point of view, from a more scientific point of view. And the candidate to do that seemed to be quantum physics, because out of all the sciences, quantum physics is dealing with these topics of, you know, well, what happens during the creation of the world. And, you know, they really dig down into what the world is all about and the nature of reality and things like that. So I started becoming a student of quantum physics, and I read everything I could over the years and really started noticing a pattern that the major theories of quantum physics were echoed in these ancient spiritual texts, which I had read, particularly in the Gnostic text. And the Gnostics were the earliest group of Christian mystics. And they were quite amazing. They were probably the most scientific of all the ancient mystical groups or the mystery schools that existed in olden times, thousands of years ago. And I was able to read Greek, and I could even read some of these texts in the original Greek, which most of them were written in. And I was astounded to find direct parallels to almost every major theory in modern quantum physics, the Big Bang, parallel universes, and the God particle. If you hear a little whiny noise in the background that sounds like a baby, that's my Siamese cat. So he wants to weigh in on the topic too. Maybe he's got something of benefit to tell us. But anyhow, so I started really, you know, drawing parallels between quantum physics and the spiritual phenomena that were happening to me. And it started to make a lot more sense to me. I was starting to feel a lot more comfortable about the reality of what I was going through, because, you know, you've probably gone through it yourself. If you have any kind of spiritual inclination, that you go through these periods of time where you're saying, you know, is all this real or is it just my imagination? Well, science is telling you it's real. It's telling you for sure that it's real. It's giving you the scientific basis to understand that this phenomenon, these things that you're experiencing, you know, really do have an echo in scientific reality. But what is reality? I mean, reality really is of the mind, as we're finding out. And what we've seen here tonight really tells us that everything we experience and what we call reality is really kind of a giant construct of the mind. We derive our little minds from the mastermind, and we do contribute certainly to the shape of reality. You know what I find really interesting? That a lot of people here may be fans, like I am, of Tolkien and Lord of the Rings. And if you go into the Tolkien legendarium, in other words, sort of like the theological underpinning of the Tolkien books. Tolkien was a Gnostic. He was thoroughly Gnostic. And if you read Tolkien's creation story, it's just incredible. Very interesting, because Tolkien imagined that the Supreme Being essentially granted power to these subsidiary beings. And like a chorus, they were all allowed to contribute something of their vibration or their thought into the creation. And there was one evil character, Morgoth or Melkor, who was the great arch-villain of the Silmarillion, the early books that Tolkien wrote that predated the Chronicles of Middle-earth. And this was the vibration of discord, the extreme free exercise of free will that permeated the creation, because the Supreme Being did allow his emanations of consciousness a certain amount of free will, and they could either use that free will to align themselves with the Supreme Being or the Supreme Consciousness, or pursue individuality in their own. And the pursuit of extreme individuality is what led to evil. It's like kind of like I can do anything I want, almost like a show I just watched, a popular show I watched on TV called The Boys. It's kind of an anti comic book hero saga, and the main character in it, who's a real bad guy. He's kind of like Superman, but he's a really bad guy. He's fond of saying, I can do anything I want. And that's the, extreme misuse of our free will. But the point is that the forces that created the universe is just not this one master force, but it was all the contributory forces, all the contributory conscious minds, which includes us in our own spiritual level, that contributed to shaping physical reality. Because as you've seen in the presentation tonight, physical reality is really an energetic vibration that we all contributed to at a higher level. So that's really kind of the background and some of the observations that I've had leading up to where I am now, why I'm doing this show, and why I wrote these books. When I first started out in this, I said, we really would like to reach people in some way, but so many people were writing the nonfiction self-help books and things like that. And I figured, well, why should I throw my hat in that arena? There's people that are probably doing a better job than I could do. But what I did have was an affinity for writing. So I decided to write these fictional novels that embodied these various principles and spiritual histories and wisdom texts and things like that, and quantum physics, embodied them in a series of thrillers, interconnected thrillers, that talked about the first incarnations of spirits into the material world and how we devolved into the creatures we are today, forgetting really who we are, and really thinking that this physical world is the be-all and end-all of our existence, which is the thought, the materialistic thought that keeps us trapped, that keeps us bound to the earth plane, and doesn't allow us to realize the real power that we have inside of us. So that's what I was hoping to convey in the books, and they did very well. So I'm glad a lot of people have picked these up and enjoyed them, just as I hope that this show is going to help a lot of people on their own journey. So let's take a little bit of a break here now. And I'm Peter Canova, host of Quantum Spirituality on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Quantum spirituality is the place where the past and the present merge to tell us something about our future. And please join us after the break and come back. We have a little bit more show to talk to you about.
The First Souls Trilogy, one of the most highly awarded fictional independent book series on the market, is a grand vision of human evolution. It chronicles the first spirit consciousness to enter the material world in three page-turning novels that introduce a new paradigm of reality based on genuine ancient wisdom and quantum science. These inspirational thrillers will force you to rethink the nature of the world in which we live. visit the petercanova.com website for information and ordering. In a world facing annihilation, a miraculous African nun rises to become the first female pope through a web of war, murder, and betrayal. Loved by some, hated by many, she becomes the deadly target of Islamic terrorists and her own cardinals as she introduces a new vision that will either save humanity or accelerate its destruction. Four people must race against a nuclear holocaust to learn her astonishing secret. Pope Annalisa is available at petercanova.com, Amazon, and other online booksellers and bookstores worldwide.
What if dreams can diagnose your life? What if we can meet the love of our life in dreams? Join host Cat O'Keefe Canovas, the number one internationally best-selling author of Dreams That Can Save Your Life, written with Duke University medical doctor Larry Burke. Dreaming Healing is where we'll explore dreams, research, and interpret dreams from you, the caller. Dreaming Healing shows can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern, with live shows on the first and third evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Come live your dreams out loud with Kat.
How did life start on Earth, and why is there so much suffering? Are we living in a simulated reality like the characters in the Matrix movie? Do parallel dimensions exist alongside ours, influencing our experience? What are the mysterious dark energies that penetrate our universe? Peter Canova folds space and time to bring the twin bookends of ancient wisdom and quantum science into a single focal point, answering these and many other deep mysteries of the creation. Quantum Spirituality can be heard every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern and 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. See the show where past and present merge to show us our future.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to the last segment of our Quantum Spirituality Show on syndicated DreamVision7Radio.com. I'm your host, Peter Canova, and you can listen to the show online, on your phone and cars with Bluetooth, and through Amazon's Echo by asking Alexa, playing Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. If you have any questions or comments, you can also leave it on my website or my Facebook page, where there is a link on my website. And you can read about my books on the website, and also go to Amazon.com to find out anything about the books, reviews, or anything else, any other questions you may have that you may have heard a little bit tonight that I talked about the books before. So in this last segment, I want to discuss the important subject of meditation. So meditation is really crucial. It's kind of like the bottom of the funnel. And we pour all this knowledge that we have, our desires, our hopes, all the things that you've learned on this show, and we pour those down into the recesses of our mind, and we want to have a certain outcome from it. Meditation is really what helps us do that. It takes all the theory and it brings it down into practice, the theory of consciousness, and brings it down into practice. So the way that works is that we need to recognize that there are different levels of mind. And this has been proven because it's been correlated to measurable brain waves. And when we're in our waking state, the frequencies of the brain waves are faster, they're active, because the conscious mind, which is really what the brain kind of serves on an everyday basis, is meant to help us cope with the realities of physical existence, dealing with our day-to-day situations, dangers, problems, so forth and so on. So when we get into the deeper levels of mind and we slow down, what's really happening is we're kind of pushing the brain aside, the activity of the brain aside. And if you remember from this presentation today, from this show today and from previous shows, the brain really acts as a choke point for consciousness. It is not the source of consciousness. It's rather the limiter, the limitation of consciousness. It steps down a higher consciousness into a physical reality, a limited view of reality that we call physical. And it creates essentially the movie that we're living in, the stage that we act upon in the material world. But that's not our real self. The conscious mind is not our true self. Our true self really is at a higher level of vibration. And so when we lower the activity of the brain waves through meditation, we start to get in touch with that source mind. And that source mind is really us speaking to ourselves. We're projecting ourselves down here, kind of like the projections in the holodeck of the Starship Enterprise. When we slow our minds down, we really trace ourselves back to the source of where all this is coming from. And we meet ourselves, and through that source, we gain higher views of reality, and we gain valuable information that we can use to navigate ourselves through the world with instinctual and information rather than logical or analytical information. And this information has really helped a lot of people and saved many lives who are experiencing the contact with consciousness, either through meditation or things like dreams. So meditation, again, it can be used for, you know, different purposes. There is an active and a passive meditation, the Eastern and Western meditation. The Eastern passive meditation would be like transcendental meditation, where you repeat a mantra over and over and you get into the zone. The Western form of meditation is a little bit more directed or guided, where you're working towards an end result that you want to have manifest into your life. And both are very valuable. We should really probably balance out both of them, because there are times when we just need to be at peace and still. And there are other times when we need to solve problems, when we need to deal with issues, and we want to do it with the wisdom of that deeper mind rather than our conscious mind. Now, there's another thing that meditation is really helpful for, and that is communicating with the unconscious mind. We have the conscious, the subconscious, and the unconscious. And the psychologist Carl Jung actually was in astonishing agreement with a 2,000-year-old ancient Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, which both of them essentially said, what you become conscious of will save you, what you're not conscious of will destroy you. And what he meant by that was that the unconscious is the seat of both the positive and the negative in our lives. On the positive side, it is where we communicate with these higher archetypes or sources of information. On the negative side, it's where we tend to repress memories, painful things that we don't want to deal with. And those repressed memories, or complexes, as they're called in psychology, can often control us like a subconscious programming, in effect, like a software that runs through our minds, and it controls us unconsciously, often with adverse effects. So by meditating and getting into the unconscious, it's like opening up a closet full of junk, and the stuff just pours out the door, and you keep digging and digging until finally you get to that nasty stuff at the back of the closet. You clear it out, and everything's now, you know, nice and clean. So meditation can also have this effect of having us recognize some of these unwanted programs that are running our life systems. So meditation is very, very important to everything we're doing. And I know some people ask me, you know, how do I meditate? Everybody's practice is different. So the only tip I'll give you is, for people who are really new to meditation and they have that perennial question of, am I there yet? Am I there yet? You know, it's not like in Hollywood movies where, you know, you start having fireworks, you know, go off in the background and auras appear around your head. I think I learned a trick, and this is really from self-hypnosis, that when I'm doing my deep breathing, kind of, you know, counting down to get into my meditative level, I picture a hot air balloon with a rope that is attached to my wrist, and the balloon is slowly rising. And as I visualize that balloon rising, my wrist kind of automatically just starts to raise up. And it's not a conscious or forced effort. You'll be surprised. The autonomic nervous system takes over and your arm just starts to like ratchet up on its own. Just let it go. And when that happens, you pretty well know you're down in that state where you want to be. You're getting down in that lower brainwave state. And otherwise, I think there's plenty of books out there and a lot of people have already established a meditative practice. So I don't really need to impart any more pearls of wisdom on meditation. I will say one other thing that's kind of cool, which is that if you've been meditating a long time, what you find, or at least what I found, is that the same information and the same consciousness starts to bleed into my waking mind. In other words, I don't really have to sit in the room and say, Om, and then go down to a meditative level to get the inspiration and get the information that I would as if I'd gone through a normal meditative practice. It's like the curtain between your higher conscious and your conscious mind. It starts to get thinner and breaks down, and then they start to kind of flow into one another. So in effect, you kind of become a waking psychic. And that's a phenomenon that happens when you're meditating long enough. And that's really cool. I think that's a great benefit. We've come to the end of our show today. I hope it was informative for you. A big thanks to our producer, Bob. And please join me again the first Tuesday of each month for Quantum Spirituality. This show will be archived on my Dream Vision 7 network page, accessible from my website, petercanova.com. That's PETERCANOVA.com. I'm Peter Canova, and this is Quantum Spirituality on Dream Vision 7 radio and TV network. Good morning or good night, depending on your location. And always keep your minds open to greater possibilities, no matter how strange they may seem. Until next time, quantum spirituality is where the past and the present, where mysticism and science merge to show us the secrets of our future.
This ends today's segment of Quantum Spirituality, the show where the past and present merge to show us our future. Join us the first Tuesday of each month for cutting-edge information and informative new episodes. This show will be archived on the Quantum Spirituality Dream Vision 7 Radio Network website page, also accessible at petercanova.com. That's PETERCANOVA.com. This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.